This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Our next speaker is the last speaker before lunch, and it's the first time that we're going to do our first annual UCSF limb preservation lecture. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. David Armstrong, who is our first speaker to give this talk. It couldn't be a better person to give our first annual talk for this symposium. Dr. David Armstrong and I have known each other for approximately 20 years, dating back to our days in training at University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio. David was a couple years older than me, so he was my superior at that time. He has done quite a bit in his 20-year career, or a little bit more. He probably single-handedly done the most for a podiatric profession in bringing together the relationship between vascular surgery and podiatry. He has numerous publications, so way too many to count, in the diabetic foot arena. And if it hasn't been for him, I'm not sure that we would be having this team approach to vascular and podiatry approach. So without further ado, please welcome Dr. David Armstrong.
All right. Well, thank you, Alex. Well, after such a kind introduction like that, you can only be disappointed. So buckle up for that. But what a great day! This is like a perfect day outside. We're like in arguably the most beautiful city in the world. I'm looking at you with that Russian kind of ennui on your face. But I see. Yeah, good. And but listen, we're at this wonderful meeting, and this is really just epic. And I want to begin by congratulating not only Alex, but Dr. Owen, Dr. Conti, Dr. Vartani, and everyone involved in this meeting. I mean, this is in a lot of ways historic, because I think it's maybe the third or fourth of these sorts of toe and flow kind of symposia, and it's worth the coming together, because you know the sum is in these cases a lot more than the parts. And with that, so a little golf clap for them. It's also a spectacular day because, you know, the Giants are playing the Dodgers in Chavez Ravine. Yesterday, Zach Baumgarten got rocked by my Dodgers, by a little outfielder. It's like it's just purpose-built for all this. Anyway, here we go. Rock and roll. Oh, come on now. You guys can't have everything here in the Bay Area. It's been a rough frigging few years, really. A few anus or horribilis for us. So look, okay, there's a lot to talk about. I'm sorry, forgive me. Through the chair, we'll hustle. I got 28 left on the clock, so let's go. No more timeouts. We're going to cover a lot of ground together as a family today, and what we're going to discuss in our very brief time together is really to try to look at, you know, why are we here? What's the big picture to all of this? The first question we're going to ask ourselves is, and you're going to hear this throughout, you already really have on the flow side, it was spectacular. Now you're going to hear a little more on the toe side, but why is this important? Why should we even care about diabetes and the foot? We're on this anatomic peninsula, and assuming we can convince one another this is a big problem, then the next question really is, we'll look at the evolution of teams and then the evolution of technology, kind of all coming together in one fell swoop. And so that's really the way forward. And then we'll ask finally, in the last couple of minutes, how we can manage and prevent severe wounds for the diabetic foot. God bless you. That was a couple of excellent sneezes. Do you trust those little sneezes? Because I don't. I like the big ones. Because you wonder what's going on behind their eyes, the little ones. Like a clean desk. Anyway, so look, the bottom line is this, that the diabetic foot is, it's common, it's complicated, and it's costly, and there are so many data now to support this. I don't think I need to tell all of you this, but let's just look at this. We can look at the overall population of the U.S., but those other bubbles are ominous, And look at these. If we look at overall diabetes, it's about 30 million folks in the U.S. Peripheral artery disease, give or take half of that in its most generous definition. Neuropathy, about the same size, give or take. And then as we start to zoom in, the bubbles are not that much smaller here, with diabetic foot ulcers anywhere from just under 2 million to a little over, just a little under 4 million, depending on how you do the math. And severe peripheral artery disease, so-called critical limb ischemia, and limb loss. So this is what we're up against. But let's move on over to this. These are data we just presented last year in The Hague at an international working group meeting as part of the WHO as a consultative group. And we looked at just under 540 million, give or take, 539 million outpatient diabetes visits in the latter part of the last decade. And we had to repeat this analysis over and over again because we didn't believe it. But look at this. The most common reason that our patient with diabetes as an outpatient will be admitted to hospital in terms of relative risk is not for, if we were to bet on anything for a hospital admission, always bet on the heart, right? It's always, you know, it's right there in the mediastinum. You know, you sort of forget about herniating out into the periphery, but it's important. Look at this. Holy cow. And so this is really quite extraordinary. And so hospital admission and keeping people out of the hospital will be important. And the UCSF team have published data on that. We'll talk about that in a minute as well. But if you start to talk about this problem and you start to compare it to other problems that we all know and we all think about in terms of its magnitude. Now, it's a little cheeky to compare the diabetic foot to cancer. I mean, we all care about cancer. Not a lot of people care about the foot in diabetes outside of this room. But let's just do this for a moment, looking at those last few bits of data. And these are data from our team and from the DeBakey Department of Surgery and Neil Barshas, who's just superb. He should be at this meeting one day. He's excellent. But look here. Again, these data are identical not only in the U.S., but in the NHS in the U.K. as well. This problem that we're talking about is more expensive than in terms of direct costs than the five most expensive cancers in the United States. Now, I would wager that there are lots of symposia going on right now in the Bay Area about breast cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, and there should be. But I guarantee you, we are the only people talking about the foot. It's looky here. Look at this. This is the definition, that red bar of a, ladies and gentlemen, of an unmet medical need. So, and looky here. Look at this. Well, you can see it. If you can't see it, then just hallucinate with me. I'm still just epically. What we see here is these data now are long in the tooth, and they're very, very conservative. They've actually increased, but this problem that we're talking about in terms of five-year, three-year mortality is at least as bad as a bad form of cancer. And we would never think of withholding therapy collectively on someone with lung cancer or pancreatic cancer or breast cancer. But it happens all the time. There's this sort of nihilism around the diabetic foot, or nihilism for you, Alex, around the diabetic foot. And the point is that people say, gosh, that person just has a sore. They're just going to get another one. Let's just cut it off and be done with it. And for some people, that's probably the best thing. But not for most. I think we can collectively agree. We'll talk about that some more as well. And that's why we're really here today. So let's continue on this sort of analogy, this sort of, as it were, with cancer. And look at these data from our team and from Stefan Moorbach in Soest in Germany. And what we see here is that recurrence is really common in this population. It's about a 30 to 40% at 1 year, about two-thirds at three, three-quarters at five. And if you live long enough with a sore on your foot with diabetes, and you're lucky to live a decade after that, then a darn near 100% of those folks are going to get a recurrence. And so recurrence in this population is highly likely. So if that's the case, and we're talking cancer, then maybe we ought to kind of rejigger, if you will, our verbiage. And if the foot in diabetes is a little bit like cancer in terms of cost, maybe in commonality, maybe people don't think about it as much like that, maybe we ought to start changing our analogies and words. And if someone heals, maybe they're not healed. Because I believe that it's the height of hubris, frankly, to think that we can heal anyone. I think, yes, we can help people. Maybe we can get them a little bit healed. But the fact of the matter is that we can maybe help people move through their world, The chances of them breaking down again are very high. So when they're healed, we don't use that word. We use remission. And that sounds like just a little play on words, but I swear to you, it's not. Sometimes words matter. Rarely in an election year do they matter, but I think these little things do. Because look, more folks are getting vascular reinterventions now in the United States and around the world than are getting interventions. More people are getting are being treated for re-ulcerations, I would argue, probably soon than they are getting for this. So this is a small thing, but I would argue that it's probably the most important thing we can talk about, amongst others. You look at this little dinky little ditzel of a pre-ulcerative callus with a, looks like one of the piggies, I can't count backwards, but it looks like one piggy's gone to market, unless they have a wicked hammer toe. But the point is, I'm just making this up as I go along, and I apologize through the chair. So look at this. So this, if we're continuing with this analogy, would be like a breast lump, you know, with cancer. And so when you describe this, it's a coming event that casts its shadow before. And you can talk about breast self-exam all you want and the problems with it, but you understand what I mean. People live in analogy, and this is a helpful way to describe this. So quickly, we don't have this kind of thing collectively. We don't have people saying, I'm a survivor of a sore with diabetes. But, you know, it's starting to happen now. Des Bell, who's terrific, started a program called Save a Limb, Save a Life. And his daughter created this little pin. So maybe we can do something like this. Who knows? I mean, it sounds goofy now, but maybe not in the future. But let's continue with all this. That's all the bad stuff. Maybe just a couple little bits of bad coming up, but mostly good. But this is good. It looks like in whatever permutation you use and you put folks together, good things sort of happen. And so we can go all around the world, all the inhabited continents and incontinent. But you see here, the point is that lots of folks now over the last generation or two have published on this. It's terrific. But maybe there are better ways to put a side together, a team together, than another. So let's talk about that, and let's kind of go where the data lead us. We'll talk about the toe, and we'll talk about the flow. And so with that, taking care of feet appears to prolong the duration of the extremity. There are quite a lot of data now to support this. These are data from Sloan and co-workers, pharmacoeconomists, and an isolated diabetologist in Duke, some Dukies. And look at this. So anywhere from a 19% to just under two-thirds relative risk reduction in amputation over a six-year period. This is in about a million lives, and looking across the United States. This is quite extraordinary. Usually, if you had like a 5 or 10% relative risk reduction, that would be a blockbuster drug. This is really something. So it looks like not the less you need something, the better it works, but the more you need it in this case when the chips are really down. You have similar data here in a similar study of Medicare and Medicaid patients over a two-year period, anywhere from a 60 to 80% reduction. So that's really good. But let me ask you this question, and I'll ask you, Mr. Chair, this question. What happens, what if, this is if you add foot care, what happens actually if you remove it? And I think I have this slide. Yes, I do. So what happens if foot care is removed from a population? This is a rare kind of opportunity to actually evaluate something. Usually when we say, when I leave here, the whole place is going to fall apart in some organization, what happens? The place doesn't fall apart. Folks figure out how to make do and to improve stuff. But in Arizona, about several years ago, in 2009, podiatric care was removed from Medicaid. And to be truthful, I was upset, but then at the same time, I thought, well, we're going to figure out a way to figure this out. And so we looked at every Medicaid life, or Medi-Cal, if you will, to translate, over that period of time. And I thought we would figure out how to fix it, but we didn't. It was worse than, these data were worse than we thought. We ended up with what we now call a foot and wallet disease. What happened was when foot care was removed, podiatric care from Medicaid, there was an immediate and sustained increase in hospital admissions, 37.5%, 22.5% increase in mean length of stay, per hospital charges increased by just by 45.5%. And for severe aggregate outcomes, which were defined as sepsis, amputation, death, that increased by 50%. So these people's feet really were killing them. We looked across the United States. We looked at all other Medicaid lives across the United States and across the rest of the United States and in the rest. And it was sustained over this entire period of time. So you see that right angle, and it was really extraordinary. So anyway, there's that. And this led to reinstatement of Medicaid services in a bunch of other states, and not quite yet in Arizona, but it's happening. It will. So that's when you remove it, when you add it, foot care. But what happens now when you with the flow? We've talked about the toe. And what about the flow? Well, revascularization not only prolongs the life of the limb, but it may actually even, this is tantalizing, and you can make a lot of arguments with this one way or another epidemiologically, but it appears not only to prolong the life of the limb, but also maybe even life itself, if we agree that identifying this problem is in and of itself almost a cardiac equivalent, maybe better care of these patients, whether one is an endo or an open enthusiast, or you are like one of my good friends and Flowmigos, Joe Mills, and come out as bivascular. You see here, there appear, these are data from Eniofalia and coworkers, and these are similar data from Matt Young in Edinburgh and other places, and you see here some promising data here in this population. So if there's good outcomes for keeping the leg on with foot care, there may be even good outcomes for that, certainly in flow care, in vascular care. Why not add two great tastes and make them taste great together? And that's the addition. If we're talking about how to build a team, maybe we can add them together, and maybe the sum is more than the parts. And that leads us to this toe and flow model. And just very briefly, you don't need me to describe all this to you. It really is just two surgical specialties on one service, surrounded by good quality medicine and nursing. We have one pager instead of a foot hotline. We call it a hot foot line. And when the thing gets engaged, the trainees descend on the extremity, wherever it is, usually in the ED, sometimes on the wards. And we have usually a intern from both services, toe and flow, on the combined service, come down and take a look at it. And then we decide whether it is a toe problem or it is a flow problem. Predominantly, if it is a flow problem, predominantly, then the flow team takes primacy. If it is, or primacy for you, Professor Bolton, in the back. I see that flash of white hair back there. If the flow is adequate, then the toe team will take primacy and will treat it surgically and medically, basically the infection, and then treat the patient for the rest of their lives. And we have three sheets. We have a toe sheet, a flow sheet, and then a combined toe and flow sheet, all on one combined. And then that allows us to round together as a big family. And then we bring in other team members of the team as we can. And the data, as they are, were not surprising when we first reported on them in about just under 3,000 cases. Just under 800 of them were toe or flow. We looked at a retrospective and prospective cohort. And what we found was, not surprisingly, just like many other studies, a reduction in below knee amputation. But really what we saw was a fundamental change in the kind of surgery that was done, away from reactive and ablative kinds of surgeries as much as to sort of prophylactic and reconstructive kinds of surgeries on the extremity. And actually, there was also an increase by 44% in the amount of endo and open intervention. Again, about a 70-30 endo-open split, FYI, in this as well. So this was really something. Even though we had a big reduction, we had a 33% reduction in the number of vascular staff during that same period of time. Now, more important than this, and much better than this, Shant Vartanian and coworkers just last year published data that I saw at the Rocky Mountain, which was awesome, that showed a reduction not only, I mean, I think you have similar data to these, but the little sleeper was that there were fewer hospital readmissions, apparently, in that by a factor of two than after institution of a very, very similar team at UCSF. So this is really promising, where we're seeing less resource utilization as well. These are also data from Jared Chung, who's now down in Houston as well. Houston is like a big freaking vortex that's just sucking everyone down there. What's going on? It's got a big sucking sound. Anyway, here you are. So quickly, as we move slowly toward our denouement, that's French, we don't have time to talk about a stairway to amputation, kind of like a stairway to heaven, but not. The great thing is here, it's like a reconstructive ladder in plastic surgery, but you can go down as well as up in simplicity. But we don't have time to talk about all this. It'd be fun if we did, but maybe another time. But the good news is that collectively we can do better than just individually here on these stairs. But what's really nifty, do I have it? Yes, is that there's really great overlap surgically, medically, mechanically between the toe and the flow on when you have all the service together and when it's really firing on all cylinders. And that's really promising as well. And that has helped to get attention of our national organizations like the SVS and the APMA. We had several years ago now, in 2010, the first ever combined issue of both journals historically. Professor George Andrus, who is here, and I don't know where he is, but he's nearby. We had the pleasure of co-editing that along with Joe Mills. So, oh yeah, there's the cover. Oh, you can't see it down there, but that's Joe Mills, pasty white feet on the carpet of my office back in the day before it got remodeled. So it's pretty dodgy carpet. I don't think you got a fomite. Before we move rapidly toward closure, what we have to ask here is, if we're going to be managing these people long term, what is our philosophy? And you guys have heard a lot about Wi-Fi already and how it's been, validated now several times. But let's just look at it kind of in action. But it's a little like, if you think about, I don't know about your clinic, but my clinic personally, and it's mostly because of me, not because of my wonderful patients. It's like a frigging circus. But just like with Ringling Brothers, or whoever, really, Cirque du Soleil, Ringling Brothers has three rings, and you should think three rings, but I want you to think three rings au risk. And let's look at this. And when you're thinking about not just another classification system, because that is like the seventh circle of freaking hell, I want you to think of this. I want you to think of rings that are just moving, because these patients are always changing every week. And you want to ask, what's dominant? Is it the wound dominant? Is it a tissue loss dominant? Is it ischemia dominant? Or is it infection dominant? And then, just like TNM, just like you've already heard, you can go zero. You're going to use 0 through 3 for each one of these. Each one of these is its own mini validated system for wound, ischemia. See, wound, there goes. Ischemia, you've already heard about this. And foot infection, this is our old IDSA system that we validated years ago. So that's great, because then you can... These rings are always changing, and you ask what is dominant as the weeks go by, and this helps you figure out who's getting this patient. And then finally, we're going to ask ourselves how we can manage and prevent not all wounds, but severe wounds. And when we're dealing with this, we have three questions. Assuming we've sorted out the vasculature and assuming we've sorted out infection, those are two big assumptions, we have three questions. The first is, what are we going to take off the wound that might help it heal? That's good quality debridement and good quality offloading. We'll talk a little about offloading in our second talk, which will be far less boring for you and just really more exciting and data-driven. The second question is, what can I put on this wound that might help it heal faster, easier, or better, or maybe more than that? And then finally, how can we prevent recurrence for that patient in diabetic foot remission? Very quickly, yeah, good. What can we put on the wound that might help it heal faster, easier, or better? There are so many of these advanced wound care technologies. And by advanced, I guess I mean expensive. That would be how I would define advanced. We don't have time to talk about all of these. They all have data to support them, and we are really evangelical about many of these tools, but we also marry that evangelism with a little bit of cynicism. And our goal is not to, as George Bush might say, complexify, but that was for you, Professor Bolton, but rather to simplify. Let me run. I got to hustle. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. The wheels are coming off the wagon. But if you think about this, you have a slow healing wound. It's a little like a slow computer, right? Histologically, this is actually a good analogy, because I'm not very clever, it's abundantly freaking clear, so I have to think about everything like something else. Look, these wounds have a lot, just like a computer has a lot running around in the background, so do slow healing wounds. There is this gamish of serine and matrix metalloproteases is another inflammatory cytokines that are chewing up all these poor little things that we squirt into it or put onto it, and we wonder why they fail. We don't have time to get into this, but it's a wonderful discussion, maybe another time. But this pro-inflammatory state is present, but what do you do if you have a lot of things running in the background of your computer? You hit Control-Alt-Delete, right? And so that's what we should do figuratively with these wounds, and it doesn't happen enough. We have to surgically reset them, and then you have a little bit of time until they sort of decrescendo into that inflammatory milieu again, and you can do things. You can skin graft them. You can maybe put an expensive product on them. You can do some other things to them, and you have a little bit of time. But that's what it buys you. So just very quickly, we have a strategy once we've done that that's vertical and horizontal, bipartite. So we want to resolve depth vertically and then resolve horizontally in terms of wound size. So let's look at a brief case. This is a patient that showed up with a 45,000 white count in a non-ketotic coma and a 1,200 glucose. He was obtunded. He was also rotunded. He's quite a big man. But the bottom line is, he laid tile for a living. Otherwise, we might think about a primary guillotine on him. But we elected just to do a good quality. Do I have it? Yes. A good quality, just debridement. You don't have to look at all this pus here. We don't have time. It's gratuitous. Apologies. It's just there's a lot of pus. He's sick. But thankfully, there's enough flow already. So the job is much easier. It's just all landscaping instead of irrigation and landscaping. So now there's a big wound here now after the second debridement, but it's not that bad. I mean, because it really is not. Because looky here, you got great glabrous skin down there. As you move through the kind of gait cycle, the big toe's still there. So it's all looking good, actually, for this man who has to, who wouldn't do well in a below knee amputation prosthetic because he has to bend down. You can't get past 65 or 70 very well with that. So this is him after just a month with a VAC. That's pretty good. You can see it, yes. And now maybe all he needs, he doesn't need a flap because look at all that beautiful glabrous skin. Maybe all he needs is just a skin graft. And you see here, this is the work of Joe Fiorito, my fellow. And I think he thought that if maybe just use all the staples in the staple gun. Just go ahead and use them all. I mean, I don't... what's the LD50 for the staples? We don't have time. But look, so this is 90 days. That looks good. Now we could do some tendon balancing, a little bit of this and that. Now you know what we're doing? We're injecting fat. I'm getting my buddies in plastics involved. It's so much fun. We don't have time to talk about it, but for this patient in remission now, we're puffing up the bottom of the skin. It's like an extreme podiatric makeover. That's next. Okay, finally, quickly, we got 4 minutes to go. We're going to make this happen. How can we prevent recurrence? It is a tripartite strategy that we have here in the face of neuropathy. We have pressure times cycles of activity. These are the things with which we can play. We can play pressure externally by offloading, internally by internally offloading. Activity, we used to have a hard time measuring that. We can do that a lot easier now, but that's what leads to these, you know, little wounds that become less than little, although I would give a redundant organ for little wounds like that nowadays. But it's really an imbalance, so we got to bring that into balance. How do we do that? Well, maybe we can dose activity like we dose a drug, you know, with like an aminoglycoside or a glycopeptide to get people up into a safe range so they can benefit cardiovascularly and metabolically without wearing a hole in their foot. But what's great now is we can measure activity better than ever. This used to be so exotic. Now we have tools that can help us enormously where we can see what people are doing in space very, very frequently and very with a great deal of fidelity, and we can dose this activity, and we're seeing pulses of activity before bad things happen. And we'll be able to apply some math or maths, Professor Bolton, to this problem to identify signals that are problematic. We have no time to talk about diabetic foot surgery. Suffice it to say that we have a common language for this as well that appears to be based on evidence now and has been validated in terms of risk as well. Just the final thing before we close on the last two things. This is one of my great mentors, Professor Paul Brand. He's kind of the king of the insensitive foot, if there is such a thing. If that's the case, then this is the crown prince in the back of the room now. Bless you. And bless the crown prince of the diabetic foot as well. Yes, may he be upstanding. But looky here, and I sort of carry their bags. I don't carry his bags anymore. He passed away, but he traveled light. This one, high maintenance. Did I say that? Anyway, Professor Brand back in the day said, wounds will heat up before they break down. He's absolutely right. If you want to look smart and you're at a cocktail hour, just mention, like, inflammation under your breath, and then walk away, and you'll be right about any chronic disease. And it's true. Look, we have several studies from the 2000s and many from the 90s as well, where we showed giving people a thermometer could identify a hotspot on one side compared to the symmetrical site contralaterally. And so we had some really good data that we could have a relative risk reduction in recurrence, and people could dose their activity like they dose their insulin. So they could dose their activity by checking their skin temperatures like they dose their insulin by checking their glucose. And now, my one conflict interest here is that I'm on the board of this company, but there's now been created a little something at home that can measure. It's like a bath mat that you step on, and it says, hey, Ms. Garcia, your big toe's hotter than your other big toe, and you've taken a lot of activity between 10:30 and noon. Do you think you can reach into your closet and grab that boot that Dr. Raiselman had made for you? We can see the RFID tag in there. And then just dip your feet in a little cool water bath, and we can go from there. And that is happening now. We have superb data well over a month out that we can identify these problems. So we also have really cool intelligent textiles, even better than this now. These now we've been working with for 15 years, and we can look at angle and base of gait. You can see when a joint is about to go down based on changes in the angle and base of gait as people walk, but you can also see temperature and pressure. We don't have time to talk about this, but maybe another time. Very exciting time on that in terms of data. And Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen, in my final 11 seconds, let me close here by, Look, I put this in honor of Professor Bolton. You know, I travel a little bit, not as much as him, but I'll go to Heathrow if I'm going over to Europe. And if I'm changing planes, you know, I'll usually take a shower over there in the lounge. And I was doing that once, not too long ago. And I was doing it and something just tasted rancid, really quite bad. Really, I wish I was making this up. And, you know, they give you those vanity kits, and they all look about the same. I wish I was making this up, and I felt even more stupid, Mr. Chair, than usual, and that's saying something. And so I recapitulated as penance for my stupidity with the video camera, and then I was thinking, as I was tasting the rancidness again, I thought to myself, just like you, I thought of Professor Lindsay of Belfast, and I thought of a great quote, the only great quote in his book. He has a horribly crap book that he made his pupils read and memorize, but one great quote in there that I bought from eBay for too much money, and he said this: for every one mistake made for not knowing, 10 are made for not looking. And I think collectively we can agree on this. You know, most of the stuff we do is pretty good, but a few of the things that we do, we can tweak, and that's why it's the practice of medicine and surgery and nursing. And maybe if we just challenge these preconceived notions, all these sacred cattle, and we come together like this and we commiserate with one another in different specialties, then maybe we can make a little difference and hopefully, Mr. Chair, keep a few more legs on a few more bodies, because that's what we all deserve, whether we have diabetes or not. And I thank you so much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.